18 minutes after 11, it is time for family members. Today being a Monday, and we've got Jeremy Bayer back with us, a counseling psychologist at Bayer. Jeremy is where you can find him on Twitter. Jeremy, thank you so much for coming in. It's lovely seeing you again.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Now, everyone, I don't know. I think everything in this conversation is going to be needing careful framing. Even my first two words, I just had to bite my tongue. Not everyone wants to live. Everyone deserves to flourish.
Yeah.
I think I'll put it in those terms.
Mm.
But today we're dealing with a very necessary and difficult topic of suicide.
Mm. Yeah, it's a topic that is unfortunately becoming more and more prevalent. A topic that is highly becoming more common in South Africa. The stats are here, up to 8,000 South Africans commit suicide annually. So it's getting worse and higher among teenagers, which is, you know, this is not something that's decreasing. Given the level of poverty, unemployment, trauma, the level of trauma that people live under, you know, given the crime level, there are a lot of people who are living in fear and anxiety and trapped by all of this, by these types of emotions, and unfortunately don't know how to express it, which means that the ultimate consequence is suicide. So this is becoming more common, unfortunately. Yeah.
Do we know at all, before we get into the individual that may be going through suicidal thoughts or even an attempt to take their life, do we know how those numbers compare to before?
To before?
Just to get a sense of, is there trajectory?
Put it this way, not less. Upwards, yes. And I say reason upwards is in correlation with what's going on in the country and with the fact that depression is on the increase.
Mm.
I think according to the World Health Organization, depression's the second most common disease. So those two go hand in hand. Where there's high depression, unfortunately, there's high suicide. So I unfortunately can't report to you good news there. Yeah, unfortunately. So on the rise, unfortunately, Eusebius.
Okay. And I suppose intuitively, I don't know, the context that you've sketched doesn't help. When you have deep inequity, when you have gratuitous levels of crime, when you have anxiety being one of the unofficial languages of this particular country we live in, all of those things combined must be the kind of set of conditions that oxygenate anxiety, clinical anxiety, and suicidal thoughts, if not actual attempts to take one's life.
And all of those things that you've mentioned also oxygenate in those feelings of no hope. We live in a country with many people living in townships with that feeling of no hope, and that's the danger. And that ultimately results in the no hope becoming substance abuse, because, well, I've got no future, so I might as well abuse substances or do things like that. And those are often precursors to the suicide. So unfortunate to say, as long as we live in such an unequal society, suicide and depression will therefore be common, because unfortunately they do go hand in hand. But to say, to add to the fact that this is not just a lower class disease, this is across the board, because there are many things that cause it. So this is still across the board, just to emphasize that.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we know your work now, but if someone in the unlikely event listens for the first time, don't, absolutely, Jeremy.
Yeah.
Jeremy gets the country we live in. When it comes to anxiety, it doesn't know class.
No.
It doesn't know urban, rural divide. It doesn't know race. It doesn't know any of those things. Anyone can be susceptible to it. You might have a buddy that you think is on the brink of making partner in a law firm in Sandton, whose life must be perfect as far as you're concerned. They're the life of the party.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, they're rushing to the bathroom trying to deal with a panic attack, with a suicidal thought, in the same way in which someone can feel deeply frustrated in a shack thinking, I'm useless. Eusebius made it out of here. I didn't make it out of here.
Yeah.
I'm useless. I can't fend for my family.
Yeah.
So it is mental illness. And in turn, the possibility of having suicidal thoughts or trying to take your life can happen anywhere in this country.
Anywhere in this country, because the causes are so far-reaching. Causes could be, you know, the death of a partner, job loss, which unfortunately, or retrenchment, which is, in terms of my experience in employee wellness, is very high. Divorce, history of sexual abuse, terminal illness, family history of suicide attempts, loss of social support, so a close friend moves away, exposure to persistent family fights. So if you look at these examples I've given, these don't just speak to sort of lower class, they speak across the board. common thing, though, is the sudden social isolation, which is a big driver for suicide. Loneliness is definitely a common reason behind it. That's why I emphasize that this is across the board. And one that I might also add is a history of being bullied, which is becoming worse, which is why it's become higher with teenagers, because it's becoming more common in high schools.
I wonder whether we can slow down the conversation and just be a little bit, I don't want to say symptomatic, because I don't want people to sit in the traffic with a list that they're ticking off and then suddenly getting anxiety or being hypochondriac.
Yeah,
Do we have a sense of what kind of profile someone who is at risk might have? Because sometimes we use language in colloquial ways, and sometimes the thoughts we have and the language we use should be taken seriously by ourselves, by loved ones, by a colleague that might suggest, you know what, UCBS, please don't take this the wrong way, but have you thought of seeing someone? Maybe call this help number, maybe can I put you in touch with Jeremy? And I wonder what those red flags should be, because, you know, someone might think when they're going through a really bad patch, they've just lost their job, and they think, God, I just wish I was dead. And they might even say that out loud, right, in a moment. That kind of thought, that kind of statement, that bit of language is never healthy. Mm-mm. But not every such speech act should be a reason to call Jeremy Bayer.
Sometimes.
So how do we know?
Yeah, listen, there are things that I said impulsively. I do get that. But I guess you would look at frequency, severity, and duration. Okay. So how often they are saying these things. People just say, you know, I can just kill myself. I get that people do that. But so frequency and duration, mental illness history. Is there a history of being traumatized? Ask about past or present suicidal thoughts, dreams, and that type of thing. You know, this is not a one-off event. There's often a sequence of events that have led to this. Analyze other history of violent behavior. In other words, have they been behaving recklessly or doing things that you could say, oh, this can end up in something very bad? Assess substance abuse history, because, and I have to say, substance abuse is a big precursor to suicide. So something to take note of. Or that you just notice that they're not socializing anymore, and they just, you know, they're socially withdrawn. They're not going out anymore. You sense that they have no hope. The mood generally is low. So this person that you've seen on an everyday basis is not what you're seeing anymore. That's when that's the red flag. That basic range of emotion is not there. Mm. And that's when you start to think, okay, something needs to be done. I just want to have a conversation with you, because I've just noticed that over the past while something's different. Mm. Not over one day, but over, say, 2 or 3 weeks. Mm. That's how you would see.
Okay, it's a difficult conversation, but if you want to call in, this is a safe space. Jeremy is a counseling psychologist. We'll do our best to give you help. We'll also give you some numbers in a second, Megan. And just voice with us your experiences. Have you had suicidal thoughts? Have you worried about them? How have you dealt with them? Are you going through a difficulty, a great source of anxiety that's making you feel really like, you know what, life is just not worth living? And how are you puzzling through that? Perhaps, like many of us, you will go through a bad patch and you're not sure, okay, is this something that I can deal with a glass of wine and with my BFF, or do I actually need help? Mm. If you're not sure, just call us and let's have that conversation and try and figure out whether you are at a stage where really all you need is to go for a walk, a strong cup of tea, or whether actually you need to take this seriously and then maybe even get professional help. 011-883-0702. Give us a call in Johannesburg and in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. Those are the different numbers that you can use to call us. Jeremy, put on your headphones for me. We've got our first call on the line. We're going to go to Ilovo. Victor, thank you so much for calling in.
Hi. Yes, baby. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you, Victor. How are you?
Very well, thanks. I just wanted to chat a little bit about suicide and depression. Mm. I come from a family that has depression that runs within us. Mm. My father committed suicide. He was very old school in terms of the way he didn't want to accept help. Mm. He didn't want to accept that he had depression. And I think the biggest thing I want to say to the listeners is that depression is a sickness. Mm. It's exactly the same as cancer. The same way cancer can take somebody, so can depression, if it is untreated. Anyone out there that's feeling depressed, that has, they live in depression. They're suffering. And they're not seeking help for it.
Hmm.
I suggest that everyone out there that lives this way goes out and finds help. Because there is help out there. There are people there that are willing to help. No one is ever isolated. Although it may feel like you're isolated, go out there, find help. There are people that care about you. There are people that are willing to help. There's treatments. There's methods of controlling it. And yes, depression is a sickness, and suicide is never the answer.
Thank you for sharing that. And my add to the to a common South African issue, which you mentioned right in the beginning, was men not talking about the issues. Because I have to say that in terms of the stats, male suicide in South Africa is higher than female suicide. So this all to all the men out there, to say to you that stress knows no hiding place. It'll find a way, whether it's high blood pressure, substance abuse, aggressive outbursts, etc. It'll find a way. So please, if you do have those kind of symptoms, please don't think I've just got to be strong all the time, because it's also a humble process. And so if you are going through those symptoms, please speak to a psychologist or a counselor or a mentor. Although I have to say, preferably if it is suicide symptoms, I would strongly recommend professional help. But to the men out there, this is not a case of I have to be strong all the time. This is a case of being humble and seeing to yourself mentally, just as you would physically.
Thank you, Victor. Thank you for sharing that. There's another aspect of that call from Victor I want to deal with, but on the other side of our EWN news break. 29 minutes before noon, we're with one of our regular experts, Jeremy Bayo, who's a counseling psychologist. You can find him on Twitter at Bayo Jeremy, and we are talking about suicide. Jeremy, maybe we can also give some numbers out. Not everyone likes calling into radio stations. Are there some useful numbers that someone can call maybe if they going through a bit of difficulty? I think I've got a number. I hope it's the right one. What numbers do you have there?
Well, I would suggest that people call the South African Depression and Anxiety Group. They are a very good organization that I mean, I remember before I was qualified as a psychologist, worked on their line. So what they do is they counsel, contain, and then refer you to a psychologist. So they're very good. Also, they do school talks and rural trips. So yeah, please call the South African Depression and Anxiety Group as well as Lifeline.
Okay, here's one number that I have, and we can compare notes if you've got a different one. For the South African Depression and Anxiety Group, the number you can call 011-234-4837. I'll give it again. 011-234-4837. And then, of course, you can also call Lifeline. Lifeline just does incredible work. 0861-322-322. Okay, the Lifeline number again, 0861-322-322. Victor's call was interesting to me. I just sort of hit a pause button because of the news break, but there were two little things there that I wanted to explore, and then we'll come to Patrick and Tabiseng's calls. The first is, if there's someone who has committed suicide or attempted to commit suicide in your family or a colleague or loved one, whatever the case might be, someone in your life, what, Jeremy, is your advice, if you have any? I don't know if this is an ethical question or just really a psychological one. What attitude should I adopt towards that person? Victor sounded very empathetic and wished that dad perhaps had dealt with a sense of being emasculated differently. I also know some people who are very angry at loved ones who have committed suicide or who've even tried to commit suicide, saying, "You're selfish. Why did you do this?" And a lot of people struggle with whether to view an act of suicide or an attempted suicide as self-indulgence or whether it really, really is an illness that led to that moment.
Yeah, I'm going to emphatically say that using the word selfish to describe suicide is completely and utterly absurd. I cannot put it more simply than that. Imagine the mental state that someone is in, that they want to end their life. That feeling of hopelessness, so absolutely not self-indulgent. round about 70% of people who do it have a mental illness, such as depression or bipolar mood disorder, which, as Victor said, is an illness that needs to be treated. So it's you actually then condemning someone who has an illness. So that's the first thing. Secondly, by someone saying, by you calling someone selfish, ask yourself, did you ever engage with that person? Did you ever connect with that person? Did that person feel uncomfortable in the first place to speak to you? So that speaks a lot to your relationship with that person. So I'm strongly condemning, a person saying that that's selfish because, what are the lengths that a person must take to buy a gun or to get a rope or to overdose on 20 pills? The lengths that a person must take to do that, that to call that selfish? Not one bit selfish, because selfish generally implies that you're trying to gain something from something. And I can't see what you're gaining from that. So I don't agree with that at all. This is purely something that, this is an empathetic act.
Some compassion.
Definite compassion.
You don't know what state someone was in.
Exactly. Yeah. And there should always be compassion regardless, asking people how they are, how are you doing, connecting with people. But the moment you judge, you're putting a barrier between people. The moment you're judging their situation, everybody's situation is different. So I cannot accept that, because that is, you know, it's a case of wait till it's you. Wait till you're in a difficult situation, until you get divorced, etc.
Okay, so my other question is, how do I deal if I now think, hey, man, Jeremy's just not himself. But I don't know, even though Jeremy and I are BFFs, he's not going to take too kindly to me saying, dude, maybe we need to get you to a doctor. First, a doctor, I don't care. Maybe in the meantime, we need to get you mood stabilizers, whatever a psychiatrist or GP might suggest. And then after that, maybe ask your doctor whether it's worth me putting you in touch with a counseling psychologist or a therapist. But how do I approach that conversation? If it's clear to me the person is behaving out of the ordinary, they've become withdrawn, or maybe they're normally quite shy and now they're doing the opposite, but the behavior is just out of kilter. What kind of conversation do I have with them if I'm scared that they will tell me to F off, or they may just, I don't know, not take kindly to their advice? How do I intervene if I think intervention is necessary?
Well, the first thing for you to know is that the F off is just resistance. It's not personal. So knowing that you going in there is completely has good intentions behind it. It's not personal at all. So you approach it as you would any other time, because you are his friend. How are you doing? I'm concerned that things are different at the moment. Would you like to talk? You can't make anyone do anything, but if you notice that they're a danger to yourself, then others, you can, my strong suggestion is that you can take it forward. Can I call someone? Because you're noticing that they're a risk to themselves. So I would suggest that, absolutely. If they just generally down and out, you can't make them do anything, because then it becomes voluntary. But I will say to you that please don't ever feel scared to show compassion. It's not personal. It's just that they maybe not quite ready, but they'll come around because to them, the world perhaps isn't a safe place, or they can't quite trust people. By you continually emphasizing that, they'll then come around. So do what you would always do. Absolutely.
Okay. We've got a couple of calls here. Let's go to North Riding. And Tabby's saying, thank you so much for calling in, and thank you for holding on.
How are you?
I'm very well, thanks, Ntabiseng. Thanks for calling. You can go ahead, talk to us.
You see, yes, I really don't even know where to begin, but for the past couple of months, I've just been, with everything that's happening, I've got problems. And the thought that comes to mind every day, I feel like I could just end my life. And when I look at my little kids, that is the only thing that has kept me going. But I really don't know for how long. Because it's not like I think about it for a while. It's there constantly in my mind. I don't see any other way out. And I know that it's not something that I really want to do, but if I feel like...
It's okay. Don't worry about crying, Ntabiseng. How long have you been feeling like this, Ntabiseng?
It's been quite a while, over a few months. I've tried to see a clinical psychologist. I went for 18 sessions. It didn't help. And spend most of my time now alone indoors. Even when I do try to go out, I just don't feel like I fit in. I just quickly want to get back to being by myself.
And so, Vincent, can I just ask, have you attempted anything yet, or are you just having suicidal thoughts at this stage?
I attempted. I took an overdose of pills.
Yeah.
But I don't know, just before I could swallow them, I spit them out.
Yeah.
But with all the medication in the house, I'm just even scared to spend time in the house because I feel like everything that I need to end my life is there. And I don't know how long I can... I feel like these thoughts are chasing me, you know? And then someday they'll catch up with me.
Yeah. If I may ask one more question... if I may ask, has triggered these thoughts or the reasons behind the suicide? Did something happen in your life?
A lot has happened.
So what happened? Recently,
being betrayed by people that I thought were friends, and it's a pattern, you know. And in the workplace, you know, when one thing happens, it seems like the whole world is in cahoots and everybody just keeps doing the same thing.
So you feel extremely isolated and feel that you're not part of a group, and has that feeling of isolation resulted in these suicidal feelings?
Okay.
Ntabi Singh, my opinion, I strongly recommend that we need to do something about this. Can we keep your details and then can I call afterwards? Can we do that in Ntabi Singh?
Yes, you may.
Yeah, please. Okay. So we give your contact details to our producer. We do that? And then the moment we finish, I will give you a call. Is that okay, Ntabi Singh?
Thank you.
Can I do that? Thank you for calling Ntabi Singh.
Thanks for calling Ntabi Singh. I'm going to take... I'm very chuffed that she called in.
Yeah.
That means that she's wrestling and having the conversation with herself. She's still in there.
Yeah.
And I want to thank you for your generosity as well, Jeremy. Yeah. So we'll do that. We'll put you in touch with her.
Yeah.
And as always, you go the extra mile. But thank you, Ntabi Singh, and just hang in there for us.
And there, if I may say, just emphasizing a thing earlier about social isolation, that feeling of I'm alone in this world is a big trigger for suicide.
Mm.
So please, this is why I always emphasize the importance of family, supporting each other, being there for each other, because suicide can be the result, feeling trapped or alone or isolated.
Absolutely.
So we will get her help. Okay.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jeremy. Hello, Sean. Welcome to the show.
Hi, are you serious? Just a little bit of background. A couple of years ago, my father died. I got divorced. Everything sort of got retrenched. Everything within the sort of 3 months of each other, which at that time was, I was in my mid-30s. And at that time, you know, it feels like your whole world collapses around you.
Mm-hmm.
And you really do not see a way out.
Mm-hmm.
And you go through the cycle, call it a cycle. Then it becomes alcohol abuse, then it becomes substance abuse, and then you just cannot for the life of you see your way out. And a lot of people don't know they suffer from depression until it's there.
Yeah.
You know, I've got diagnosed. They said, okay, the depression, take these antidepressant pills, and it just makes you numb, completely numb. But you know what? This was a thing, call it 10 years ago, and now I'm remarried. I'm a foster parent to a child, a beautiful six-year-old special needs boy. That's a lovely part of my life. I've started a business, which is nice and successful. But you know what? Without me being to the deepest, darkest parts of my soul, I would never have been able to appreciate what I've got up to now.
Okay.
And it took all the things to go wrong. To be, I mean, I've got huge scars on both my arms. where I cut myself to pieces. But you know what? I wear them with pride because I actually know that I've been to the darkest place in my life.
Yeah.
And I've succeeded to climb my way up. And I think that is the most important thing is people must understand when they're in their dark place,
yeah.
the only place you can go to is up.
Sean, can I ask you a question, please? And firstly, yeah. I want to thank you for calling in. And well done on having managed to get out of that dark place and giving life and flourishing another chance. Looking back now, I don't know how much reflection you have done. Obviously, having overcome it, you can speak about the power of what the scars have done for you in terms of how you are living your life now with purpose. But I wonder whether you remember the mechanism that got you through it, the techniques, the tools. What helped you to not go ahead and successfully attempt to take your life? Do you remember what it was?
You know what? You've got to face it. You've got to say, right, you know what? This has happened. There's nothing I can do. Killing myself and taking my own life is not going to change that. This has happened. Just pick yourself up and move forward. You've got to have self-determination to say,
okay.
you know what? It's not going to be the end of me. This is not going to be the end of me. You've got to have that self-drive.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Did you speak to anyone? Did you get social support?
I had a psychology student.
Okay.
That was a friend of ours that actually that people put me in contact with.
Yeah.
And she actually sat with me, and she said, okay, and she worked with me step by step and to help me say, right, this is enough. No more of this feeling sorry for myself. I must get out of this funk and just move on.
So she was your therapist and helped you through it. That's fantastic.
Yeah. Ah. You know, and it's and can I tell you, sitting back thinking about it now, you actually don't believe that you got yourself into such a negative space.
Yeah, yeah.
But you do. You just feel like there's a mountain on your shoulders and there's nothing you can do to move it. It's horrible. Mm.
This is one thing I have to emphasize with mental health and anything else. A lot of the reason why people get weighed down is because they say it's a me versus depression or me versus this. If you do that, depression will beat you every time. Sometimes you just have to say it is what it is. This is what I have and work with it. And this is how I'm going to work through it. For me, it comes down to the four A's, which I often suggest. You can avoid, you can alter, you can adapt, or you can accept. So sometimes you just have to say, okay, I have depression. I have this illness. I can treat it and still work, still empower others. I often say, Eusebius, make your problem your power. Fine, I have this, but how can I help others? How can I influence others in the right way? Because I'm not perfect, and the truth is, no one else is.
Absolutely. 10 minutes before noon, let's go back to the lines, and Jeremy Bear is with us, and we're talking about suicide, having suicidal thoughts, how to deal with it, both yourself, but also if there's someone in your life that has gone through difficulty or is going through it, how best might you actually deal with the situation? Fani, good morning. Hello, Fani.
Hello.
Hi, welcome to the show. Thanks for holding on.
Thank you.
Share with us your story, Fani.
Yes, I drank about 78 pills about 10 years ago, and I survived, obviously, and I just know the importance of getting help. At that moment, I was in the mindset of cowboys don't cry and you don't need help. You have to get through everything yourself. And then I just got into a darker and darker space. And when you get into that space, you just think of nothing else but to relieve the pain. Mm. And for me, the relief was drinking the pills and drinking the next pill. And that was going to take away the pain. And obviously, it didn't. When I woke up, there was a lot of carbon in my stomach. And my parents came up to Pretoria. And there was a lot of tears. And then I got help. I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. And I know for a fact that a lot of men in South Africa have this idea that cowboys don't cry. You don't go for help. Or if you if you tell someone they need to go get help, they say, I'm not crazy, I don't need help.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's bad. My father was diagnosed as well.
Okay.
My brother as well. And
okay.
Yeah.
Well, firstly, may I say, you know, the fact that you've recovered from that is great, and I'm glad that you are taking care of yourself. Are you on your medication for bipolar?
Yes, I've been on chronic medication for 10 years now.
10 years, okay, great.
And yes, it's been going great, so I'm very happy at the moment.
No, fantastic. And again, to emphasize the point of just talking about it, we're not asking for a lot. We're just asking to say, we're here to listen to you and to share, to not say by taking your life, it's selfish. Please do not use phrases like get over yourself or toughen up. This is serious stuff. So please, if someone says to you they're suicidal or they use phrases like I'd be better off dead, please use it. So again, Fani, thank you for sharing that and emphasizing and being an example to other men of this need to speak about it instead of the attitude of cowboys don't cry. Thank you, Fani.
Fani, can I ask you a quick question before we let you go? And thank you for your generosity.
Yes.
So there are different views. I mean, I share Jeremy's view. Occasionally, Jeremy and I disagree. Today, we agree. I think that you have to be deeply empathetic if you do not know what someone else's headspace is. Someone on Twitter says the following, Fani. Lindsay said, not about you, but about what Jeremy had said earlier. Experts are not God, Eusebius. I disagree with Jeremy on the selfishness. Suicide is selfish, says Lindsay. And Lindsay says, I have attempted it before. Fani, what is your own personal view about people who might think that you even having taken those, even having attempted to take the pills that you took, we're happy you survived, and I'm sure your family is as well. What do you say to people who say that you were selfish in even trying to do that?
Well, I would answer them and say, well, if you go through what I went through at that moment, you would know it was not selfish. When I went through, I thought what went through my mind at that moment was I was going to make the world a better place by me not being in it anymore.
Yes. Yeah.
So for me, it was an unselfish thought, if I can say that.
I get you. Yeah, I totally get you.
Yeah. And she said another interesting thing that a psychiatrist and they are not God.
Yeah.
Yes, that they are not God. And there's a lot of people that say you can get, they can pray you right. And we had an interesting case of someone who was schizophrenic. And he told us our story about pastors praying to get the schizophrenic demons out of them. And I heard stories about people getting prayed the depression demons out of them, and it doesn't help. You have to get help from a professional person, and you have to some of the time you have to get medication, and that is the only stuff that helps.
Thank you, Fani. Thank you for your generosity.
Well, just to come back to this idea of selfishness, let's use the example of bullying. Imagine being persistently publicly humiliated. And then that bully victim then takes their life. Now you're calling that person selfish. I cannot understand that. Or bipolar mood disorder, which is an illness which needs to be treated, or depression. So please, to the listeners, if you have depression and you are suicidal, please discard this thing of, oh, if I do this, I'm being selfish. It is your life. It is your perspective and your reality. Selfish again has a motive of I need to gain something, and there's nothing gained from suicide. So please don't see it that way.
Absolutely. Douglas, I think we can have one more call. Douglas in Polokwane. Douglas, thank you for calling in.
Hi, Eusebius. I have a totally different take on this, and it's not grounded in anything else except my experiences. I've lost a sister to bipolar, suicide, gunshot wound. I've lost a friend, also bipolar, guest himself. I've lost quite a few friends, etc. And my actual take on this one is that there is a place for suicide. And there is a place for someone to get out of the system and get out of their demons and get out of the space they're in. Because actually nobody is listening. Nobody is actually listening to those people. And the medication, nothing is working. I'll give you an example of my sister, who was a public hospital patient, who saw a psychiatrist once every 6 months and came back with a checker's bag full of medication. And that was the only help she received.
We have run out of time, Jeremy. Okay. You've only got 30 seconds. That's a very difficult one now. That's a complicated ethical question about... suicide. What is your thought on it, just in closing?
I am going to emphasize that there are people who do care. There are psychologists, there are social workers, and to emphasize to families who perhaps don't understand mental health, to emphasize to that, to please listen, as opposed to stigmatize. So again, to not emphasize that once you have suicide, there's no way out, because there are great services out there. So I cannot promote that. I simply cannot do that. For bipolar, though, you have to be on medication. You simply have to, same as schizophrenia.
Absolutely.
So I can't agree with that, unfortunately.
Jeremy, love your work, love your compassion. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.